Welcome to Maximum Security Democracy, Volume 5. Today is December 29th, 2006. For quite a bit of today's episode, I'm going to talk a lot about the Department of Homeland Security and some of the latest programs to come out of that department and how it once again puts your civil rights at risk. We'll talk about the Bush administration and how scientists are really fed up with the politics of science. We'll talk about that. And we got a few other things. I think we got a good show planned for you, so listen on. Well, the Department of Homeland Security is at it yet again with another program to limit your civil rights. It is called the ATS, or Automated Targeting System. And how it works is they gather information on every traveler, into a huge database, and it would keep track of anything having to do with how you travel, what you eat, where you sit. It could gather all kinds of information. And the sad thing is, they're not telling how or exactly what information that they're gathering. They haven't revealed if it is targeting people because of their names. It certainly would be targeting them based on their destinations. One-way tickets, how often they travel is probably another factor. How often they travel out of the United States is quite a smorgasbord of information that's being collected on citizens. And it seems to be that there is absolutely no oversight other than, you know, the people involved, the Homeland Security Department itself. There seems to be no oversight, no outside, you know, review process of this. And, you know, if you end up on this list, this information is stored for 40 years. If you end up on this list, you are going to have hell traveling for the next 40 years. If you end up on this list for the wrong reasons, in other words, they made a mistake and you ended up on this list, and that is certainly possible, that you end up being rated as a high risk, you know, for doing something that really has nothing to do with terrorism. You could travel to a country, or you could just be have the wrong combination of these blind requirements come into play, and you can end up on this list as high risk. And so what can you do about it if you get on this list? Well, I guess technically you can write a letter, but that's about it. They don't have to say, they don't have to show anything. They don't have to tell you how they gathered the information. They don't even have to tell you what information that they have. So you're pretty much stuck on this. It's pretty crazy that, you know, that the government is harvesting all of this information. I mean, everybody travels, so there's going to be information technically gathered on just about every U.S. citizen underneath this law. And there is nothing that you can do about it. There's, you know, evidently they believe that they are exempt from the Federal Privacy Act, which does, you know, allow you to access information that the government has on you and to challenge information if it's incorrect. Apparently they think they're exempt from this program because it involves some terrorism. But I don't see how, you know, when you're targeting every U.S. citizen, I mean, we're not all terrorists, so we ought to have a right to review that information that's being gathered on us. And I can't believe that, you know, Congress is allowing this to happen. And with the wiretapping fiasco, this is yet another, you know, Big Brother attack, which it just seems like, you know, people have forgotten that we have, or used to have, rights and liberties in this country. You know, I guess we're hearkening back to the days of, you know, Joseph McCarthy, when, you know, the government would collect information on people and create blacklists that people, you know, once you're on it, you know, you won't be able to get a job, you won't be able to, you know, do anything, you won't be able to travel the way you want to once you get on this blacklist. And the other sad thing about this program is that the government can share this data with other people. It can share it with local governments. It can share it with foreign governments. It can share it with the United Nations if they wanted to. It could share it with just about anybody. But they don't have to share it with you. And that's the sad thing about it. But it just seems like, okay, now we've got this massive blacklist. And the other thing about it is it's an automated system. That scares me. You know, I mean, a human regulated system scares me as well. But, you know, when you have a computer who is just, you know, following some computer program that puts together these complex algorithms and creates a profile on you and then rates you based on that profile, that kind of scares me. And it should scare you. It should scare every American citizen that a computer could screw up your life for the next 40 years just because it either gathered information, or it, you know, gave you a profile that really doesn't match up to who you are. And I don't see how it could. I'd like to see the evidence that this type of profiling really works. You know, I know they're doing it for security in airports and such, but, you know, I just think that dooming somebody for the next 40 years because they accidentally end up on this list, that's terrible. And there's really little you can do to undo it. It's a travesty. And I'm really surprised that, you know, it's been up in the news a little bit, but it doesn't seem that people are particularly concerned about it. And it's like one of those things that, it's not going to concern many people until they end up on the list. And they end up having, you know, the major inconvenience of it. And it's going to be, there probably won't be enough people who get up on the high-risk list that, you know, are going to be able to raise enough outrage to the general public. And it will probably continue. But I hope that people start holding Congress accountable and for allowing this nonsense to continue. You know, and as it's going, I've lost complete faith in the Department of Homeland Security. I just think that it is a huge spying program. It seems like the whole department, you know, it's one thing after another. And it should be the Department of Spy Security. That's what they do, it seems. That's their primary job now, is to spy on every U.S. citizen to make sure that we're not terrorists. And it's out of control, it's outrageous, and it needs to stop. So it seems the Department of Homeland Security's new job is to spy on U.S. citizens and forget about, you know, securing the country. You know, here's a few facts about our border that falls under the jurisdiction of the Department of Department of Homeland Security and the Border Patrol. We control about 14% of our southern border. And for every one person who crosses that border, two to three get across safely without getting caught by the Border Patrol. So while the Department of Homeland Security is spying on every U.S. citizen, we can't even lock up the southern border. Now, how does that make sense? Yeah, I would think that our first, you know, our first order of business and our first line of defense would be the actual border itself. But evidently, our first order of defense is to look within and tear and look into the lives of every U.S. citizen, as the citizens are the big threat to our country. And that's not true. I mean, the threat is outside of our country. You know, there may be cells within the United States, fine, but the threat is not our citizens within our country. It's outside our country. So why are we so focused on our own people? Why can't we get over that? It's because the security and the fight against terrorism is not really, you know, what they're fighting against here. They're just trying to, it's information gathering on all citizens. You know, it's not just to fight terrorism. It's about control. Control of the people. And if they were really serious about security, they would seal up that southern border, but they haven't done it, you know. And I really doubt their sincerity until they address that border. Once they address that border issue, then I will really believe that they're serious about security in our country, but not a minute before they do so. I want to switch gears and talk for a little bit about the politics of science. Recently, 10,000 scientists signed a statement demanding the restoration of scientific integrity in government policy. On that list were 52 Nobel Prize laureates. And the reason why scientists are becoming outraged and taking these kinds of measures is because, time and time again, the EPA is going to the scientists and saying, this is not matching, your work is not matching what end result we want, and, you know, we think maybe you ought to think about your results again. And the end result is scientists, you know, are feeling pressure to get results that match more in line with what the Bush administration wants them to get. And, you know, some of these scientists are getting their funds from the Bush administration. And, you know, they're supposed to be independent. They're supposed to be conducting good science and not concerning themselves with what the political ramifications of it are, but they are being bullied by, you know, the Bush administration when it comes to their results. If their results don't match the policy initiatives, then they are put under pressure to get results that do. And that contradicts the whole idea of scientific integrity. You know, one of the main issues, of course, we all know about global warming. We all know the Bush administration doesn't want to accept the fact that, you know, we do have global warming. Or if they accept the fact that there's global warming, they want everybody to believe that it's just a natural cycle. Now, granted, you know, the Earth has cycles. And some of this global warming could be the result of a very long, you know, cycle that's coming around again. But, you know, what I've always said is, can we afford to be wrong about this? Now, if we're doing things to our environment that is, you know, increasing global warming at a much more rapid pace, and I don't think you can argue that, you know, even if we are in a cycle where the Earth is warming, that our pollution is not adding to it. I mean, it has to be. I mean, you can't argue with me that it isn't. So you ought to be taking some steps, you know, to reduce that. And it's, I don't think that the steps are very difficult steps. You know, at the same time, you're going to increase the air quality and make people's lives better. And that could be something that could be done around the world. I don't see that it's going to destroy business. In fact, I think it's going to promote business. And you just think about it for a minute. Hybrid technology. The Japanese have become the masters of hybrid technology, while U.S. car manufacturers have been fighting tooth and nail over gas mileage regulations. If they had just gone with it and started producing cars that had better gas mileage, I think we'd all be ahead of the game. And I don't think they would have lost out a dime. In fact, they might be leading the Japanese in that area of hybrid technology. And I think that, you know, there is some technology out there. We ought to be promoting it. There's some great technologies that just need a little bit of a push and could become mainstream, could save us money in the long run, and could, you know, make us leaders in this area. It's only a growing area. But, you know, there's too much big oil money talking here, and they certainly don't want, you know, our government changing over towards alternative forms of energy. And it's not just the global warming issue, it's food. It's what goes in our food. There's trash that we get in our food. You know, there's additives and crap that we don't need in our food that, you know, food manufacturers like to put in nonetheless. And there is a lot of pressure when it comes to, you know, the research that goes into these products that go into our food. And I think I want, you know, unbiased, unpressured research when it comes to these products and what goes in our food. So, you know, I think that, you know, as long as it's been politics, it's been pressure on science, you know, to conform to people's political views. But it just seems like this is, the Bush administration has become, you know, experts at pressuring and getting their way, and experts at making the world believe that their narrow picture of the world is what you should be seeing and not the big picture. So it's just, it really is outrageous when you take and change the science behind things. You know, if they find, if there's 50 research papers that contradict and one that agrees, they're going to grab the one that agrees and stand behind it 100%. And it just doesn't make any sense. And how can you do that? You know, the one research paper that, researched paper that backs their point of view, they're going to grab every bit that backs their point of view, and they're going to discard every other piece of data that contradicts the point of view. And that's not, you know, that's not benefiting the people. You really need to look at the body of research and go with what the whole entire body of research says, not pick and choose. And that's exactly what this Bush administration is doing, picking and choosing the pieces of research that match and discrediting anybody who doesn't. And that's wrong. It's not good for our country. I've talked a lot about healthcare and healthcare issues in the past, and I got another little tidbit of information I came across today. In the state of Maine, Anthem Health Insurance Company is proposing a 20.5% increase in their Health Choice insurance product for next year. Unbelievable. When's it going to stop? I mean, how in the world can people continue to afford health insurance if it's going to increase 20% every year? And that's happening, you know, nationwide between 10 and 20 and even higher for some insurances. Congress, I don't understand it. Why aren't you doing anything about it? You know, you can't continue. It's unsustainable. It can't continue, and people cannot afford to continue to shell out these kinds of increases every year. Not going to happen. But anyways, I don't know. I'm going to end today's podcast with an audio clip of Ann Coulter getting a history lesson. I just love it when the Republican right wing makes statements about how what they think history is when, you know, it seems to match their idea of what history should be. But anyways, you can go to MaximumSecurityDemocracy.blogspot.com, and I got a link to this Ann Coulter as well as some of the other topics I've covered today, some links and various articles on the internet.
When we were on Hannity discussing the anti-war protesters, Canada used to be one of our most loyal friends, and vice versa. I mean, Canada sent troops to Vietnam. Was Vietnam less containable and more of a threat?
Not that Canada
Vietnam
did not
today?
Send troops to Vietnam.
I don't think that's right.
Canada did not send troops to Vietnam.
Indochina?
No. Canada, Second World War, of course. Korea? Yes.
I Vietnam. Think you're wrong.
No, it took a pass on Vietnam.
I think you're wrong.
No, Australia was there, not Canada.
I think Canada sent troops. Well, I'll get back to you on that.
Okay.
That's going to do it for today. Check back again sometime, and I might have another podcast up for you. You can go to the site of the podcast. The address is georgebloom@podomatic.com, and there you can subscribe via iTunes if you'd like.